Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and this is Side 1 of For the Record program number 684, Interview with Daniel Hopsicker, Business as Usual in South Florida. This is being recorded on August 9th of the year 2009, and once again, it is my pleasure and privilege to bring back to our airwaves Daniel Hopsicker, the author of, among other titles, Barry and the Boys and Welcome to Terrorland, as well as numerous articles on the madcowprod.com website. In fact, all of the articles on the madcowprod.com website. Plus, among your many credits, Daniel, you are a cinematographer. You is making movies, dude, and or videos or moving pictures with Woods.
Well, that's a little strong, but you know, there was a time when I was a halfway decent producer and a halfway decent writer, and then when I had to start doing it all myself, quality began to slip a little, but that's what happens when you're patrolling the wrong side of the street.
Which is not
a
difficult...
Yeah, I've got a new show coming up that I'm still working on diligently.
I was just going to say, patrolling the wrong side of the street is not a difficult thing to do in the area you've been hanging out.
I don't know, the mind boggles, doesn't it? I was watching the news tonight before you called, Lester Holt on NBC, and there's no news again today. There's a lot of stuff about a plane crash that happened yesterday that killed 9 people. Tragic loss of life, but then there was the CHP was chasing a car, and there was a crash today in California, and that killed another half dozen people, and that pretty much was the newscast.
The funny thing is that the ethic that produces the sort of high body count journalism is, of course, if it bleeds, it leads. And yet the funny thing about that is that there's an awful lot of violence, an awful lot of bleeding, and an awful lot of bodies turning up in interesting places, bodies of interesting people turning up in interesting places. And there's been no shortage of that kind of activity in the milieu, my favorite word again, that you've been on which you've been reporting. And yet it just doesn't seem to make the jump from madcowprod.com, let alone to the New York Times. Doesn't even make it to the Sarasota Herald Tribune.
No. The Sarasota Herald Tribune's a special case. I think the Sarasota Herald Tribune enjoys not covering the news in Southwest Florida. I think journalists in many cases are frustrated about that fact, but the journalists working for the Sarasota Herald Tribune seem to enjoy being on the wrong side of history. Most recently in the case of Art Nadell. I mean, it's amazing what's going on in Venice, Florida. Still going on in Venice, Florida. I got a call from a local guy there a couple weeks ago pleading with me to come back. What's been going on in Venice, Florida since 9/11 is it has turned out that Huffman Aviation, which trained both terrorist pilots that took down the World Trade Center, has been operating as a continuing criminal enterprise under the legal definition of the phrase. And the most recent owner is accused of running a $400 million Ponzi scheme. So
that is the aforementioned Art Nadell, correct?
Art Nadell, right. So it's gone from being now, the city council of Venice has to approve the owner of Huffman Aviation. Somebody can walk in and buy Huffman Aviation, and if the city council doesn't approve it, they've spent $3 million for naught. So the City Council of Venice has had some strange criterion for ownership there, apparently. Wally Hilliard was deeply involved in heroin trafficking. I've said that and will happily say that until he sues me, which will never happen, which is a crime of transnational organized crime. You know, you could call it the mob, you could call it the mafia. You'd be wrong in both cases. It's transnational organized crime. And, of course, Ponzi schemes are the original mafia specialty. So apparently, to own Huffman Aviation, you've had to be connected. Now, there is currently, the poor people in Venice began to become aware of this. I would like to think partly because of my efforts. And they voted into power a reformed city council, which wanted to regain control of the airport. And even though this guy, Art Nadel, gets busted for stealing $400 million, they are still trying to push through at Huffman Aviation, or what passes for it these days, four new jet hangars. Now, if you've got a jet hangar at an airport like Venice, okay, you could be storing mountains of cocaine without anyone ever knowing it, and clearly it's a pitched battle now. Okay, I mean, these people have absolutely no shame. If the ownership of one candy store in town, if two out of three recent owners are mass murderers, for example, and the candy store has an application into the city to expand to the size of a Walmart, you know they're going to have trouble. So the city council wants to stop Huffman Aviation from building these four new jet hangars, and lining up against them is the FAA. The Department of Homeland Security has come into town. The FBI has come into town and begun questioning the vice mayor, for example. And the city was sued by what you would have thought would be a Freedom of Information Act lawsuit. Florida has a Sunshine Law, which is, of course, honored more in the breach than in the observance. And because the city council of Venice, in an attempt to regain control of their own airport, held meetings with local concerned citizen groups that wanted to help them do that, some guy in Sarasota filed a $500 million lawsuit claiming that they were holding meetings in secret. The Department of Homeland Security came to town to investigate the vice mayor on allegations that she was using unauthorized use of the frequencies that pilots use to ask them not to fly over her house. And the guy that brought that to the attention of the Department of Homeland Security, which had nothing better to do than come into Venice and investigate the vice mayor, was a guy by the name of Greg Woods, who was instrumental in teaching Muhammad Atta to fly.
Oh, really?
Yes.
So, in other words, let me just
and the guy that's running Huffman Aviation these days is named Roger Jernigan, and Roger Jernigan was so corrupt that even the Venice Sheriff's Department, which maybe as corrupt an organization as exists in the United States today, found it necessary to ask him to leave.
Ask Jernigan to leave?
Correct.
All righty. So let me just sort of fix these specimens in formalin for the purposes of the listeners. Now, in an attempt to sort of regain control over this ongoing criminal enterprise, Huffman Aviation and related enterprises, a milieu, an institution through which the 9/11 hijackers, or at least some of them, successfully infiltrated and apparently were able to do so because this was a protected criminal network protected by powerful forces. When the Venice City Council goes to take charge of this, and when they make a concerted effort to neutralize the building of four jet hangars at Venice Airport, Greg Woods of Huffman Aviation, someone in who had been instrumental in teaching Muhammad Atta to fly, files a lawsuit, a $500 million lawsuit, claiming...
Close, but not... Greg Woods called and made an allegation that the vice mayor had used a frequency, unauthorized use of a radio frequency, supposedly used only by pilots.
Then who filed the suit?
Triggered a Department of Homeland Security investigation into the vice mayor.
Okay.
The lawsuit was filed by some guy in Sarasota, claiming to be on the side of the angels, in the Sunshine Law. But it clearly was, and it cost the city $500,000 to defend itself against the lawsuit. So, I mean, these courageous local city councilmen who were voted in on a reform platform are under attack, serious attack, and leading the charge are the attorneys from Boone and Boone.
And Boone and Boone is?
Boone and Boone is the law firm in town that has been representing the interests of Jackson Stevens for 35 years. Jackson Stevens, now, I know nothing personally about Jackson Stevens except what I read in the newspapers. And if you do a search on Jackson Stevens on the internet or even in reputable newspapers, you'll find out that he has been accused or alleged to have been involved in CIA, NSA, in Iran-Contra. He was George Bush the Elder's biggest campaign contributor. In 88, he was Bill Clinton's biggest campaign contributor. In 92, he sort of ran Arkansas, and he built the, and this is where this started, or at least where it took off. He built the most imposing building in the tiny town of Venice, Florida, to house the national headquarters of his Beverly nursing homes in the early 70s. And when that company moved its operations to Arkansas, the building was taken over by Jackson Stevens and Beverly Enterprises attorneys, the law firm of Boone and Boone, which is reputed to have run the town of Venice ever since.
By the way, in the latter part of Welcome to Terrorland, you go into the Jackson Stevens empire and nursing homes and various health care and elderly care programs, which really turned out to be part and parcel to the ongoing and overlapping criminal activities that you have been investigating and about which you're speaking right now.
Yeah, because of two facts. First of all, Wally Hilliard, and these guys all purport to be free enterprisers, okay? And yet they all got rich on the U.S. government, okay, at the trough of the U.S. government. Wally Hilliard ran a crooked health insurance company that grew large by buying the business, the policies that had been written by other health insurance companies that they had found unprofitable, and then made this business profitable through the simple expedient of not paying out claims.
That'll do it, yeah.
This is Wally Hilliard, the man that owned the flight school that trained Muhammad Atta, okay? And one of the most interesting things that I found in Venice when I got there was that concurrent to owning these two flight schools, which were running Arab men through for no discernible reason. There's no reason for a millionaire to buy a flight school because they don't make money to begin with. And he was losing $40,000 a month on the first flight school he bought in Naples and bought a second one and paid twice what it was worth. So it was obviously not a matter of money. But Hilliard's second business at that time was an airline that was announced and going to fly routes that had already been proven unprofitable by other airlines that had gone bankrupt trying to do the same thing. And no one in aviation in Southwest Florida could understand why this guy was starting an airline. And they actually announced service between cities that they never sold a single ticket on flights. And yet they had a half a dozen jets sitting around doing nothing and pilots on the payroll sitting around ostensibly doing nothing.
I was about to say, I got a hunch they were doing quite a bit. It just wasn't something that appeared in their college yearbook entry, you know.
the accountant for Hilliard for Huffman Aviation in an interview with me one time, and he told me something that I've always remembered ever since. He said, sometimes when things don't make sense, business sense, he said, they do make sense, just in some other way. Okay? Just in some other way. So why I became interested, or why this health insurance nursing home angle became especially interesting, you know, other than the fact that Jackson Stevens is reputed to have taken place, been involved in spook activities or directed them. He was Jimmy Carter's roommate at the U.S. Naval Academy. Where it started. Was because Hilliard's partner in this airline that did nothing was a man from Washington State who was at that same time participating in the $300 million looting of pension funds of mostly mob-run unions in Portland at the time. He also owned nursing homes, and his company, Altera, had a nursing home planted right across the street from the Venice Airport and catty-corner to the national headquarters, what used to be Jackson Stevens National Headquarters and is now the headquarters of the Boone & Boone law firm, which is has been reputed to have been running Venice for the past 25 years. So here you have this tiny town of 10,000 retirees. My parents moved there in the late 70s, about 1979. And these people play golf. They're from the Midwest, and they have been steamrolled by this criminal juggernaut ever since. And of course, this is how these things work. When the cocaine that came into the United States to fuel the cocaine epidemic in the 1980s was coming mostly through, I hate to say this, Bill Clinton's Arkansas and MENA, Arkansas. It was with the collusion of the local police, the state police, the governor of the state, and most especially the U.S. attorney for the Western District of Arkansas, over whose office Barry Seal's C-123s were roaring in and out, and his name was Asa Hutchinson, and he later became the head of the DEA. Irony of ironies. So when a famous writer named Anthony Summers spent a month with me in Venice a year ago, his book, a major Random House book, comes out next year, and I have my fingers crossed as to whether he will address, because this is the third rail, okay? What happens when you address the fact that heroin trafficking had something to do with the biggest event of the 21st century? What happens? I mean, what happened to Gary Webb? I would not, and he's a nice man, Anthony Summers. He's written major books on everything from the Kennedy assassination to J. Edgar Hoover. He broke the story that J. Edgar Hoover used to run around in a dress. And he's a meticulous historian. I have no idea how much I know that he was able to verify much, if not all, of what I reported in Welcome to Terrorland. I know that he went out and interviewed the same people, because I took him there and did the best I could to get him to see the same people that I had, and I know because he told me that they said the same things to him that they said to me. We'll see how much traction this gets when his book comes out. But the anecdote I'm telling you is we were driving around one day looking for Charlie Grappentine, who was the gruff apartment manager where Muhammad Atta lived with Amanda Keller. And Charlie Grappentine and his wife Paula Grappentine, Charlie is an ex-Marine. He was in his 60s. He may be a little too young for World War II, but he was certainly there for Korea. You know, he's the kind of guy that's got an anchor tattooed on his forearm, okay? And when the FBI told Charlie Grappentine that he didn't see what he knew he saw, Charlie Grappentine did not take it well, okay? So one day I'm driving around with Anthony Summers, and something came on the news about what goes on, you know, too many damn times here in this country, which is some obscene crime. Somebody walks in somewhere and kills a dozen people, and Anthony Summers, being European from Ireland, was stating that that we needed to take the guns off the street in this country. And you know, I sort of like would like to live in a society where that is the case. Okay, any European country where that is the case would be fine. But I was forced to tell Mr. Summers that gangsters run my country. And when they take guns away from people, the only people that have guns left will be the gangsters, because they do goddamn run this country. Excuse my language. Gangsters run the U.S. of A.
Very briefly, Daniel, just a mini editorial. Certainly firearms can be misused and they can be owned and utilized irresponsibly. But, you know, the sort of, you know, bash America, isn't Europe highly evolved and civilized? Not something that I can really take all that seriously past a point for a variety of reasons, including and especially the fact that so many of the tributaries that you followed, and perhaps in Side 2 we can explore some of these more fully, so many of the tributaries that you followed running from that very same Venice, Florida, Huffman Aviation, in milieu and environs, there we go, run in the direction of Europe. They run in the direction of Germany. They run in the direction of France. Ireland, and in particular Eastern Europe and the former Soviet Union. So the notion that, you know, those coarse American gangster-bred, you know, ruffians, you know, look at what they do. Yeah, but look at who their business partners are, and look at who's actually, look at who the cowboys are that are riding this particular range, and an awful lot of them have European accents.
Oh, sure. I have no doubt, but you know, the Bilderbergers may get together and have appointed Wally Hilliard. But I have no personal knowledge of that. You know, I mean, I work from the ground up. It is clear to me, that globalization came first to international organized crime, and that when David Bowie sang in the 70s about, or was it Paul Simon? Paul Simon, a loose affiliation to millionaires and billionaires. David Bowie called it a theater of financiers. You know, that's what it is, and I'm sure this all goes back. No, I'm not sure, but there probably is a supranational organization. I guess some people call it the Black Nobility. I don't get into all that because I'm just trying to report facts on the ground that I can find out. But I have no doubt that you're right. That you know, it's not like the U.S. Is a rogue nation acting on its own, is it?
Well, the network is a global one, and it runs right smack dab through Main Street USA. And one of the points that you've been illustrating in this broadcast so far is that when, you know, Main Street America, when the Venice Town Council attempts to impose the sort of civic and legal order that most of us would take to be the status quo or the given for American civil society, they not only come smack dab up against this international criminal milieu with all of the financial and political and actual criminal muscle they can bring to bear, they also come up against a bunch of federal agencies who've been mobilized, at least ostensibly and from what you've told us, on behalf of the malefactors.
Exactly. It's as if the Gambinos had been operating out of a candy store in Brooklyn, and been proven to have been operating for 40 years out of a candy store in Brooklyn. And when the candy store puts in an application to grow to the size of a Walmart, the city fathers of Brooklyn are unable to do anything about it. That is frankly the case.
Yeah, the kind of candy they've been selling is Turkish taffy, I'm afraid, is a pun
there.
International
heroin trafficking.
Yep.
I just read a book for the second time. I always like learn more the second time than the first because I'm a little slow. And I read a book called Underground Empire by...
James Golden, isn't that his name?
James Mills.
James Mills, that's
and,
it. Yeah.
And the book came out in 1986 and illustrated that the international heroin trafficking, that there was a single worldwide international heroin cartel, and that it was stronger than any government that was able to oppose it.
Daniel, have you ever read the book The Great Heroin Coup by Henrik Kruger, a freelance Danish journalist? That has a foreword by Peter Dale Scott. It's subtitled Drugs, Intelligence, and International Fascism. The book actually came out 6 years before Invisible Empire. I think it would be worth investing whatever it would cost to get it off of the web. It's still around. It's long out of print. But get that book, Daniel, read it, and you'll see... You know, you'll see the kindergarten and first grade version of what later blossomed into Welcome to Terrorland and Barry and the Boys. It's a really good book and anticipates not only what has been taking place in Florida, but links it directly to an international intelligence and frankly, fascist milieu. And it's a great, great book. Also, as long as I'm plugging books, Daniel, a book that really dovetails beautifully with the work that you've so courageously produced over the years and downloaded here. And that's a book called Invisible History, Afghanistan's Untold Story by Paul Fitzgerald and Elizabeth Gould. And it's so much of what you've been talking about dovetails with that book and the Afghan heroin traffic from the period in which the Soviet war was going on right on up to the present is a major element of that book and fits like a glove into what you've been presenting to us over the years.
Well, speaking of books, let me use this, spend 30 seconds here, if I might.
Yes, you may.
Putting this out to your readers. Barry and the Boys is out of print because I don't have the money to pay for another publishing another reprinting of it. Now, Barry and the Boys was kept out of bookstores for 5 years after it first came out by a lawsuit filed by Barry Seals' attorney, whose name I don't know if I'm allowed to mention, but I won't, who later was in business with Adnan Khashoggi and incorporated a company that is right in the middle of the story of the DC-9 5.5 tons of cocaine. And Barry and the Boys was kept out of bookstores for 5 years, and yet the book has sold steadily and well. Well, not well by any standards other than my own, I wouldn't suspect, but it has sold well. And, you know, here I know we're all hurting in this recession, but I can't afford to reprint the damn book. And if you look on Amazon Marketplace, it's selling for $185 a copy. But, of course, I'm not getting any of that money. So if you've got anybody out there, if there is anyone out there that wants to get in touch with me about helping to reprint the book, it's certainly not a money-making venture, but it certainly is not a losing venture either because the book has been selling steadily for 8 years, and yet I can't afford to reprint it. So there you go. Barry and the Boys is out of print and selling for $185 on Amazon Marketplace.
However, we're almost out of time on this side, Daniel. Tell us about your website, and then on the other side, I'd like to, second half of the broadcast, I'd like to explore people like Citizens Brassington, Citizen Boringer, and some of the other Boy Scouts who've been receiving merit badges courtesy of Huffman Aviation and Environs.
Well, my investigative reporting has been for many years on madcowprod.com. And have just launched a blog, DanielHopsicker.tv, and there is an 8.5-minute preview of the new documentary on there.
MadCowProd.com, and we're going to be right back with Side 2, and Daniel Hopsicker and yours truly going to do it in the road, or at least in the runways on Huffman Aviation down in Venice, Florida. This concludes Side 1 of For the Record program number 684, interview with Daniel Hopsicker, business as usual in South Florida. This program is being recorded on August 9th of 2009. For Daniel Hopsicker, this is Dave Emery saying thanks for listening.